Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, guys? Let's talk about our title sponsor, BetOnline.ag. With NASCAR, UFC, and golf back, BetOnline already has hundreds of games and events to bet on. Plus, basketball and baseball are coming back this summer. They have live and simulated sports, as well as a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge you can enter for free. Visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and check out the action. BetOnline is your online wagering solution.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdwrites.com and Bleacher Report, Preston Ellis. Today, I am super excited because I'm joined by longtime friend of the pod, but far too infrequent a visitor. I don't even know the last time you've been on the podcast, honestly. The man who battles with autocorrect pretty much daily, Mr. Jamal Dunn. What's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. It's good. Yeah, I mean, last time I was on, I think it was, well, we still had a season. so that there was that. I had left my home. I was leaving my home every day back then. Now not as much, but everything's been pretty good. Glad to be back.
Different times, man. I don't know how we're going to explain this a generation from now to our kids. Let's go over to his cohort today and the man who's been making the rounds this past week on multiple different platforms. You're so popular, Mr. Christopher Connor. What's going on, man?
The only thing I'll say is headphones in ear and drink in hand, man. Everything's good.
My mother-in-law is here, so I'm on my best behavior. But when she goes to bed around 10 o'clock, that's when the bubblies come out. Let's before we talk,
something.
Yeah, what are you guys drinking right now?
I am drinking a red wine called Cupcake that my wife likes, but my wife is actually a little bit more than 5 months pregnant, so I've been just killing her wine collection. So she can't drink. So,
hey, man, that's amazing. Is this your first?
Yes, my first, and it's my first two. They're twins.
What? Get out, man! How did we not know about this? That's amazing.
I think I put it in the little writers group chat. I don't know. It was a while ago, though. So.
Oh my God, dude, that is absolutely incredible. So let's start with Jamal, because you have such great news, and because I haven't had you in a while. We start on a great note, but things are going to get somber pretty quick with the tragedy surrounding George Floyd. Sorry, there's no real way to just pivot into this discussion, so I'm just going to hardball right into it. We've got George Floyd, peaceful protests, police violence being increasingly available via video. We've got a president who preached, "If they loot, we shoot." We have players, celebrities, donors, movements. Seemingly everybody's taking part in this movement. Jamal, talk about what's happening right now. Is this already the most important moment of our generation?
It feels like it. It definitely feels like it. Just from the perspective of, sort of a black male, and Christian, I'm sure, speak to this as well. Like, in our community, we've been talking about this forever, pretty much. But it always felt like the larger community, even friendly faces, didn't quite get it. Hello, Drew Brees. And so now we're kind of at a point where you're starting to see people understand, all right, this is an issue that needs to be seriously addressed, or people continue to be, being abused and things along those lines. But I've never seen widespreadness, but that's not a word.
It can't be today. But, go ahead.
But I've never seen it as widespread as it is now in terms of the sentiment. And I think the sort of intolerance of people being intolerant, right? So like your point of view, which for instance, Drew Brees, right? What he said on Yahoo Finance last week was the exact same thing he had been saying since 2017 when the whole Kaepernick thing started with him doing his kneeling protest for police brutality. The exact same thing Brees said, but now the world in general was not willing to tolerate that because, you know, it was obvious that, you know, the protest was not about the flag. Nobody's trying to tear down the flag. It was, it's a point where when you do your protest, you have to do it when people are looking. There's no point in protesting in your living room because nobody can see you or understand what you're talking about. So you have to do it when eyeballs are on you, and the national anthem just happened to be a good time for that. But a lot of people pretended that, you know, it was about destroying the flag or against the troops or something. And, you know, many people back then felt it was disingenuous, but people just kind of let it slide. And now it's not sliding anymore. So I don't know. We'll see if this gets backed up with, you know, political action. But it does seem like there's more groups that are more serious about it now outside of the Black community because, you know, if people are racist against you, you can't stop it, right? It's not necessarily your issue per se. You're just the one being impacted by it. So I'm optimistic, but we'll see where it goes.
Now, we didn't touch on this topic with Ali and David in our conversation a few days ago, but I want to bring it up with you, Chris, because I think that this is just one in many bullet points of what's occurring right now that we're going to look back on and remember. And Jamal just mentioned Drew Brees. And I think what happened with Drew Brees is very important because he is such a symbol, the golden boy, the savior of New Orleans, coming in from Katrina and leading the Saints back to relevancy after going 3-13, one of the storied quarterbacks of our generation, if not all time. He misspoke. He put his foot in his mouth. He made a giant mistake. He was rightfully rebuked and criticized for it. But it also cast a light that it's not all just bad people who have racist points of view, racist thoughts, or maybe just misunderstandings, if you want to clarify it in that respect. There are people who don't have the correct way of thinking, who need to be corrected. And he became a poster boy for that. He became a shining example of that. And you saw a lot of leaders in the African-American community emerge and call him out on it and step into that limelight, step into that spotlight, like Malcolm Jenkins, like DeMario Davis, like Shannon Sharpe. What kind of a moment was that from the African-American community? Did you see that as an important one?
I think it's a very important one because I think a lot of people, well, I won't say a lot of people because we've seen those that have been kind of waiting in the shadows to use this example to say, I told you about Drew Brees that were 100% right. And I mean, for example, Grubb was one of them who had, you know, Kevin as well, that has kind of, you know, been on this stance for a while that, you know, while Drew may not be an evil person, he is not what the state of Louisiana and the world wants to crack him up to be. And I think what makes this so pivotal is that a lot of people were surprised by it. And, you know, it's kind of sad, but it shows that, you know, we hear, we read what we want to. We look at people a lot of times based off of what we would like them to be versus what they actually are. And, you know, Jamal brought up the point that, you know, hey, you know, he made these comments back in 2016 when the kneeling first happened, along with a bunch of other, you know, organizations that Drew has been tied to, and whatever you feel about his values being a 40-year-old white man from Texas. But, you know, he kind of, you know, he told you who he was back in 2016. A lot of people chose to brush it off to the side, ignore it, because he wasn't the only person washed up with that line of thinking. But now, with you seeing more and more support and more, let's call it what it is, white people and brown people coming out to the fold and say, all right, you know what? We haven't been listening before. We need to listen now. Drew was no longer, you know, I mean, his similar standpoint, it had become and turned sour. It had now turned from he has every right to say that to the majority of people saying that's ignorant. And I think that's, you know, that's very important because we know the influence that people like Drew has. And not only is it important from what how the world got a chance to see it, it's important because going forward, you have an opportunity to change the way that this man thinks at an age of 40, which he can easily be stubborn and say, this is how I see things. I am not changing and I am not adjusting. This is the way that I'm going to be and I'm not moving. You have a chance to change his life. And with the influence that he has, it can help what we're trying to do as Black people going forward. Make no mistake about it. You know, we can go out and protest and say, you know, and put up as many signs as we want and, you know, say as many things as, you know, that have been repeated over and over through the test of time. But until you have people in higher places, until you have people that have influence and people that don't necessarily look like us in a country where we are outnumbered by millions, it does not hold the same value. And a guy like Drew Brees, if he is genuine and truthfully going onto this side and being somewhat of an advocate, I mean, it's as pivotal and powerful as something that, well, as many things that we've seen over time, but it could really start a change and a rebellion going forward. And I mean, hopefully it's right. And hopefully more people like him, you know, can come out and, you know, be similar to what we hope that he's going to be going forward.
Yeah, for sure. There's this element on social media, as there's always been, with kind of a witch hunting, you know, searching for those who have done wrong or who you can catch doing wrong. But it's also pivotal that when you do find them, like Drew Brees, turning him and opening up his state of mind and improving it can create something good going forward. And I'm going to switch topics briefly, Jamal, but feel free to touch on that one. There's so much to tackle. As a white man, I get kind of overwhelmed. Of course, there's George Floyd and there's police brutality, which is kind of in the forefront of the conversation right now. But then you've got so many other instances of inequality, from education to health to wealth. I did some research. Of the 621 billionaires in America, only 5 of them are non-white. It's just truly incredible numbers that reflect our society. If you're speaking to a white man in terms of where to start to make a difference, to make a change, of course, all of you know that we're trying to do our part. We're creating scholarships for young African Americans. But in terms of what we can do outside of that, where's a good place to start?
Well, I would say, you know, with the people around you, right? Because, you know, when you look at something like racism, like, look, just as a everyday person, you know, a white person, you know, for instance, just as an everyday person, of course, you're not going to necessarily be able to make political change by yourself or anything like that, although you can be a part of a larger movement. But I would say the biggest thing anybody can do is within their own circle of people around them, right? I mean, I've got lots of white friends, and sometimes they'll, you know, and this was before, you know, any of this stuff happened, but you know, we'd be talking in conversation. They would tell me, "Oh, yeah, I've got a, you know, so and so, you know, is, you know, he's, you know, racist, or he's got, you know, some prejudiced views against this group or that group." And just kind of, I'm not saying you got to preach to everybody, but just checking people when they actually say those things. Don't just let the crazy uncle be the crazy uncle unchecked, and let them understand that, you know, like, I can't necessarily change how you think, but it's not okay. And if enough people do that, then we may have progress. We may have progress overall, right? There's that famous quote that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is when good men do nothing, right? So I think it's a larger sort of understanding that I think a lot of our white friends really have kind of a, you know, they're not racist. And so they feel like, okay, well, that's it. You know, I'm doing my part and that is good, right? If you're not racist yourself. But if you see it and you hear, or you hear other people, you know, saying things or doing things that are in that vein, then you have to call it out. I'll give you a perfect example. I was talking to one of my old college professors. I had lunch with him not too long ago, and he works at the, I shouldn't say this, but he works at the Federal Reserve, right? It's a central bank of the United States. And he was telling me that they, in their hiring process, they didn't recruit at HBCUs, at historically Black colleges. And not only that, when they had, you know, had a few Black candidates for some different roles that they had, one of the people running one of the departments that was hiring, you know, basically made a veiled comment about the types of people that they hire, right? And, you know, he was telling me that you know, they kind of got into an argument about it. And so, and that's, and I'm not saying get in an argument at work. I'm just saying those are the types of things, you know, where it rises up. And a lot of times, a lot of people in that situation at work would just be like, all right, well, I guess we'll go with, you know, the other guy. And that'll just be it, even though it may be against their own taste. But kind of calling it out wherever you see it in your own life, I think would be the most helpful, because it just, in the same way that Drew Brees realized that the way that he was thinking about it and being so stubborn and making it about the flag when it really wasn't, the way that he was doing that, until he got called out on it, I guarantee you, if there wasn't that inflammatory response, he would show up to training camp saying the exact same thing, right? He wasn't going to have some come to Jesus in between now and then if nobody said anything. But the fact that people stepped up and said, hey, man, this is not about the flag. It never was. You can still respect the flag and also understand what's going on with the protests. And so in that same way, you can do that in your own life where you see it, because white people are generally going to hear it. Like, we see a lot of racist stuff or whatever and recognize it. But you guys are going to see and hear more than we are, because there's certain things people aren't going to say when we're around. So that would be my comment on it.
That was great stuff, man. I think I'm going to make an excerpt of that and post that on Twitter for everybody to see, just so they can get a glimpse of this podcast. Chris, I want to ask you a similar question. Just talk about what's going on in the state of Chicago. I know some of the streets have gotten barricaded. Just tell us about some of the developments of that. How have you personally been affected by everything taking place in that city?
Well, I mean, the first thing here that I guess hits closest to home is that I am dating a Latino woman. And for those that hadn't been paying attention to what was happening in a small town called Cicero, Illinois, if you don't know how, like, the state closest, well, within the state bordering Chicago is a lot of small townships and cities, but you know, they're all close. They're all within 20 minutes of proximity to the actual city of Chicago. You know, it's just how the area has been built. But within those bordering areas and small towns, there are a lot of, you know, different areas that are, you know, exclusively pretty much built around a community of individuals. I mean, if you want to look at it, I mean, I'd say that the area that I live in is probably one of the most segregated areas that I have seen in regards to, we have a whole area, of course, called Chinatown. You have Cicero, Little Village, and a few other places that I'm forgetting right now that are pretty much exclusive to Latinos, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans. And then you have certain suburban areas that are mainly white with a few black people mixed in. And then of course you have a bunch of different inner city areas that are manifested or surrounded with people that look like me, black folks, and with some Latinos and Hispanics mixed in as well. Well, Cicero is mainly a Latino neighborhood. It's mainly a Latino city. That's, you know, they have a bunch of stores that their people put together, that their people built from top to bottom. Looting, protests, it didn't matter pretty much where it was throughout the state lines, throughout the city. You were pretty much going to be surrounded by it. It didn't matter. Nobody was being nobody was being forgotten about throughout this time. So basically through the rage, there was a few different stores that were owned by Mexicans, owned by Puerto Ricans, that were hit. And as a community of Latinos, they pretty much wrapped their arms around the community members, and they decided to protect their stores. They decided to protect their streets, their areas, their homes. And it got really bad. Now, on the other side of, you know, on the other side of these areas that are surrounded by Hispanics, you have lower income African American areas that are maybe about 5 minutes apart. They're that close. Well, when you're that close and it eventually becomes some sort of pain, you eventually become angry through everything that's happening, you become defensive, and you have, I mean, I'd say, a mixture of elements that can bring a race war. And for a week, or just about a week, that's what we were experiencing about 15 minutes away from my job. Latinos that felt like they were being attacked, they were going to protect everything that they had. And Blacks, some whites, that were looking to protest, others that were looking to take advantage of the situation, and others that were pissed off that Latinos weren't on their side. And it just, all hell broke loose. So at my job, we ended up, I work at a car dealership, and we ended up closing down due to protests, rioting, and just, you know, through the threat of violence. There were a lot of bordering cities that ended up being shut down and having an early curfew. And it was a little bit different from some of the things that people saw happen downtown, with like a lot of the stores being broken into. There wasn't as much violence, even though the cops were out there. I saw some armed forces that were there as well as time went on. But the situation by me, it ended up becoming pretty violent. People were afraid for their lives. They, you know, if you didn't fit a certain profile, you were riding through some of these neighborhoods, you know, you had a chance of being pulled out. A couple of people did end up dying. Others went to hospitals. There were houses being broken into. It got really bad. And, you know, it kind of put my girlfriend in a weird spot, because, you know, she understands where we're coming from. You know, she has a lot of people in her community that may not, in which she's trying to have to explain to them a situation that they may not fully get right now. So, you know, that can bring tension. So, yeah, man, I mean, when it's all said and done, it was a weird time last week, you know, I mean, trying to, you know, hope for peace, but understanding that voices needed to be heard. It was extremely weird. It was extremely weird from my perspective, in the area in which that I lived in, while I looked at other places that I felt like points were getting, they were getting put across in ways that were being respected in a way. It just felt like with some of the violence and the things that were happening, people ran with that versus some of the other positive things that, you know, were happening in other parts of the city.
Yeah, sensationalism at its finest. Everybody wants to find the most radical story rather than uplifting the most positive one. Number one, I'm just glad you guys are safe. How scary, how frightening, and how uncomfortable that in 2020 you guys are having to deal with this, especially so close to home. So I'm glad you guys are safe, and I pray that you guys don't have to deal with this going forward. And has life kind of returned to normal? You're going back. You went to work today.
Yeah, I think as of Thursday, we've been able to operate at full hours. So we're good again. Actually, one of my brothers lives in one of the areas that are mainly it's kind of a mixture of Latino and Black, but it's notoriously known for being a Latino made neighborhood. I actually rode over there last Sunday to work out with them. And I mean, the streets were open. There weren't really any cops out there. There were no people outside with guns or checking cars or anything in traffic. So it looks like things are fine. And there was actually a Black and Brown uniting kind of peace protest that was put in place last night in another Latino neighborhood by the name of Pilsen that seemed to go pretty well. And that was good to see. To kind of, you know, remember that, I mean, when it's all said and done, especially in those type of neighborhoods with type of people that come from them, you know, we should be standing together. And I think that I was really happy to see that message being put out again. So I think after that, I think slowly we're getting back to normal and getting back to the root of the problem. And yeah, man, I mean, it's good to see.
I'm glad you guys are okay and that things look like they're trending upwards, hopefully. No way to make a hard pivot, so I'm just going to dive right on in. Thanks to Christopher, Jamile, everybody who comes on the podcast. 100% of our podcasts over the next 2 months are going to go to our Armchair Media Creative Scholarship. I'm also doing a personal donation myself, as well as some of our listeners. Ryan Anders, 36, Music is My Refuge. Thank you both so much. Ralph Malbro, Andrew Juge as well. The criteria is super simple. African-American, under 21, in some kind of creative field. All you have to do to apply is email a graphic design, any form of photography, writing, audio, video, journalism, creative writing. You don't have to be in college. We're just looking to help somebody who's trying to get a little bit of help with their career path in some kind of creative fashion. You'll just email scholarship@armchairallamericans.com. That's scholarship@armchairallamericans.com. We're going to make a hard pivot to Pelicans talk. If you guys want to come back and talk about this at any time and bring on somebody else, it can be me, it can be Grub, Ali, Kevin, whoever you want, please. The invitation is open. For now, let's talk about Pelicans. We've done some writing, some articles this week. I know Christopher wrote about Josh Hart last week coming off the bench. I wrote about Jackson Hayes. Jamile, we know how good the starters have been when they've been healthy and when they've been together. But when rubber meets the road with these eight pivotal games, the Pelicans are going to need a bench. We don't know the logistics of what's going to happen with the pandemic, if anybody's going to get pulled out. Injuries, of course, are a concern with games taking place seemingly on every other day. Who are you relying on most off the bench for the Pelicans in this capacity?
I mean, I would say it would have to be Etuan Moore. Etuan Moore and I guess also Nicolo Melli. With Moore, you know, obviously he's a guard. And the reason I say Moore is just because, you know, during the regular season, they were kind of working in, Frank Jackson, who, you know, is my, you know, you guys know I love Frank Jackson. But they were working in Frank Jackson, working in Nikhil Alexander-Walker even earlier in the season. And now at this point, we're basically in the playoffs, right? So at least from the Pelican standpoint, as soon as they tip, they're in the playoffs. Like there is no time to like warm up and see who fits where and all this kind of good stuff. They're just going to have to go with the guys who they know they can count on in a big moment in late season basketball. And Etuan, obviously, is a vet, has been around for a long time, can shoot, can make the right pass at the right time within the offense and just kind of play within himself. So I think he's going to be a big piece. And Melli, who as the season went along, right, when we started, he was a little bit shaky. But as we went along, he got a lot better defensively. He was always pretty good, a pretty good passer. But, you know, as he learned his teammates, he got even better in that. In that department and has already kind of earned respect from NBA defenses as a shooter. So he's got a little gravity with him. So I would say Etuan Moore and Nicolo Melli. I would be very surprised if we saw any of Nikhil Alexander-Walker unless there's a blowout. You might get a little Frank Jackson if you know, one of the guards, you know, if all the guards need a blow for some reason or you're doing something different with the lineup. I could see that as well, but I pretty much think it's going to be the starters, J.J. Redick, Hart, Etuan, and Nicolo Melli, and that's just basically going to be it. They don't have time for anybody else.
I was talking about this today with David Grubb on 1280 AM's Hard in the Paint. Make sure you guys check that out. I think it's from 10 to 12 every day Central Time. And we were talking about some of the uncertainty surrounding some of these free agents, Chris. Of course, the Pelicans have to make a decision on Etuan Moore this summer. Kenrich Williams is a restricted free agent. Jahlil Okafor is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Frank Jackson is a restricted free agent. Do you think those impending decisions might instigate the Pelicans to play these guys a little bit more, a little bit sooner because of their impending free agency? Or do you think they should rather stick with the guys that they know they have locked up?
I think you're probably best at, in this case, when we're considering the players that were mentioned, the impact that they can probably give you, I don't think it's large enough to where you would spend a large amount of time or you would sacrifice the minutes or time of some of your other guys and trying to win basketball games to get yourself into a playoff situation. So I would say, you know, you're going with the guys that you know you're going to have long term. unless you feel like some of these other guys are going to not only help you win basketball games right now, but they could possibly be a piece going forward. Out of those players that we, you know, that you named, I mean, you know, the only one that I can really see that I would be interested in, personally speaking, would probably be someone like a Kenrich Williams, mainly because of his size, you know, the hustle that he brings. He's a low maintenance type of player. And I mean, you know, we've seen him be able to help put together winning basketball type plays, winning basketball, you know, things that translate to wins long term. Even if when he was playing well earlier in the season, because of the team was so banged up, they weren't necessarily winning a bunch of games. But we know guys like him, effort, guts, glue guys, they help you beat good basketball teams and bad teams as well. But the problem with Kenny, of course, is his ability to knock down open shots and provide you anything offensively. I'm interested to see what he can do because they don't have an assortment of guys that are his size. I mean, they have guys that are his height in that 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", area, but none of them really weigh over what, 190 outside of, I believe, Josh Hart. You know, so, you know, he might be a guy that I would like to see gather some minutes. But when you're talking about Frank Jackson, Etuan Moore, while Etuan may be able to help you from a veteran standpoint, you know, make some key plays, if we're talking about a playoff situation, I don't know if he's a part of the landscape going forward when you look at what they're going to need. So, yeah, I mean, I think the guys that you want to invest in, luckily enough, are the ones that are currently supposed to or scheduled to be on your team going forward. And I mean, you know, they're your best players right now to go with that. You know, some of them are all 2, 3, 4 years into their career. So, you know, I think that's a benefit for them.
What's up, guys? Let's talk about our title sponsor, BetOnline.ag. With NASCAR, UFC, and golf back, BetOnline already has hundreds of games and events to bet on. Plus, basketball and baseball are coming back this summer. They have live and simulated sports, as well as a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge you can enter for free. Visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and check out the action. BetOnline is your online wagering solution.
Yeah, 100%. Talked about Grubb, and Jamal mentioned this. I think you both did. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, you've got him locked up, so you don't necessarily need to see him. It'd probably make more sense to see Etuan Moore and Frank Jackson just to see if they're part of the future. But then when you get into the front court, Jamal, at some point you're going to have to see some of Jahlil Okafor and Jackson Hayes. We don't know what kind of shape Derek Favors will be in. Injuries are a concern. COVID's a concern. Foul trouble will be a concern. At some point, inevitably, you'll think you'll have to get minutes from one of those bigs. If it is a playoff atmosphere, which one of those two do you trust?
Honestly, it's more of a matchup thing. It depends, right? Like, it's tough because neither of them are great defensively. At least Jackson gives you maybe a little more in terms of rim protection when he's actually in the right place, which is rare. But, but you know, he does give you at least athleticism on the, and especially on the offensive end, he'll run the floor and make the other bigs work. So that's kind of the trade-off that you get with him. With Jahlil, he's not good defensively. And, you know, he does have one good skill offensively, but, you know, are you really going to be running a bunch of post-ups with him? I don't know. But I could see Jahlil playing more if we run into a large center or some type of, you know, a really big player on the front line for some team that Jackson, you know, he's kind of struggled with some of the bigger or some of the stronger big men in the league. So I think they'll actually both probably play, right? It'll be just like in the regular season where, you know, Favors is tired and, you know, maybe Melly or one of the other bigs is not a good matchup for whatever center is on the floor. So you just kind of have to roll one of those guys. And it's a weak point for the team right now. And there's not, you know, there's no fixing it at this point. They'll just have to kind of solve it on a game by game basis based on the matchups and what they need on, you know, particular possessions on which one they're going to play. But I think both of those guys are going to play.
Now, Chris, I'm going to follow up with this and I'm going to add a monkey wrench in here. Grubb brought this up today and I never really considered it. Darius Miller might actually be ready to play. We've seen some of those Instagram videos that Coach Mike G posted. He was doing full wind sprints 2 months ago. So if the Pelicans do want to go small, if we get into one of these situations where, you know, Favors has to take a seat and you slide Zion to the five and maybe put a four in next to him and play small ball, do you think there's a chance we might see Darius Miller?
Well, I think that if you can, anytime you can add a little bit of size and shooting to this team, you take that opportunity. So while Darius may not be the best defender, I don't, you know, he's not a 3-and-D guy just yet. He does go out there and try and give effort. He's not known for having much lateral quickness, and he's not an exceptional athlete, but he does have a pretty decent basketball IQ, and I think he can go out there and give you some positive plays on that end. And then offensively, as long as he has a battery in his back that's telling him to shoot when he's open, similar to what we saw in Nikola Melli, if he's out there letting it fly, we've seen him have some positive moments from that area as well. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. If Darius is healthy, I mean, I think he was going to play a decent amount of minutes for this team at some point, especially with how Alvin can be with the rotations. Maybe not as many minutes that would, say, leave a Josh Hart out of the rotation. Somebody will get that, some won't. But I think it's enough to offer this team what they're going to need, floor spacers for your guys like Jrue Holiday, Brandon Ingram, and Zion to be able to penetrate and kick out when needed. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Darius could see some minutes, but anybody can see minutes in Elvin Gentry's system. I mean, it's just how it rolls. I mean, if you have a nice haircut one day, maybe that probably won't work in Darius Miller's favor. But if you have a nice haircut one day, Alvin might throw you in. But I think Darius fits.
All right, Jamal, let's talk about some winners and losers from the Pelicans resuming to play. These eight games are going to prove pivotal, not just for guys trying to earn, you know, rotation minutes going forward, but also guys in line for a potential payday. We've got some extension eligible veterans in Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart. We've got guys like Brandon Ingram who are almost assuredly going to earn the max. Let's talk about some guys who could be potential winners. If they ball out, who would be the biggest in your estimation? Did we lose Jamal? Jamal, can you hear
me? No, I was just on mute. sorry about that.
Autocorrect.
The anticipation.
okay, all right. So, but I would say Josh Hart to answer your question, because, and the reason for that is most of the other guys who have any type of contract implications on the rest of the season are going to get what they're going to get. Ingram's going to get the max. Holiday will get, you know, some giant contract. I don't know if it'll be a max, but it'll be, you know, big. And that's down the road a little bit. And Ball, I think, will get, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of max. Just because he's such a high pick, those guys just basically almost always get, you know, that young veteran max. But Josh Hart is a guy who, you know, his next contract could go either way, right? I mean, if I fast forwarded, you know, 6 months and I told you, you know, Josh Hart signed an extension worth, you know, $7.5 million a year, you probably believe me. If I told you that he signed an extension worth $11 million a year, or ended up signing with another team for, you know, a big price tag like that, you'd also probably believe me, because he brings a lot of value. He makes a lot of, Chris talked earlier about Darius Miller making, not Darius Miller, I'm sorry, Kendrick Williams making, you know, some winning type plays. Well, Josh Hart is that on steroids, right? He's always, you know, grabbing rebounds, out rebounds for his size, makes timely shots, not scared of the moment, you know, plays, you know, good defense, and is just a team guy. So, he was one of the losers of, because he was having such a good season as a role player. So he was kind of one of the losers with everything getting shut down. And probably that, you know, maybe have impacted his eventual contract that he'll sign. But if he plays well, and if, say, the Pelicans actually make the playoffs and they get even more, time, you know, we've seen time and time again, role players who get exposure in the playoffs and, you know, play well, get paid, right? We can go all the way back if we want to stick with Pelicans/Hornets.
Don't do it. Right? Don't you do it. I knew you would do it.
James Posey had that great series with the Celtics when they were in the playoffs. And then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the Pelicans signed him for a huge contract. And then we eventually backdoor and do the exact same thing with Solomon Hill, right? Josh Hart.
Oh, my God. Oh.
That's the track record. That's who we're dealing with. But for that reason, you know, Josh Hart is a better player than both of those guys. And so if he does play well in playoff situations, I could see that really hiking his price to the level where it could potentially, given everything else the Pelicans have to deal with from a compensation standpoint, could push him sort of out of their price range and, you know, maybe end up, you know, having to trade him or something like that.
I'm going to let you answer the same question, Chris, but before I do that, let's just say that Josh Hart does overperform, you know, shoots 40% from three, scores like 12 to 15 points a game, gets 7 to 8 boards a game, plays, you know, pretty good to lockdown defense. Does that all of a sudden make Drew Holiday expendable?
No, not necessarily. I don't think so, because, you know, we know that even at Josh Hart's best, what Drew offers you and what Josh offers you are two different things. And no matter, you know, I think even if at Josh's best, I don't think he's the defender that Drew Holiday is. You know, he may be a better shooter, but he also can't create for himself in a half court style or in half court situations like Drew Holiday can. So, I don't think that's necessarily possible unless we see Brandon Ingram. I think he's a star now, but if he comes out and he's superstar level, you know, then maybe that changes. Because I've been on the boat to where I don't think you can pay Drew Holiday the type of money you're paying him now long term with a lot of the other guys you have to pay. But I mean, when we're talking Josh Hart, I think no matter what Josh does, his value, you know what his value is. I think it's the other guys around this team that will kind of determine what you do with Drew Holiday, or if that makes him more expendable, right? If Lonzo Ball is attacking the paint more and kind of taking some of the penetration responsibility away from Drew, you could maybe look there. You know, if they're able to, and same with Zoe, if Brandon Ingram becomes a better defender in the perimeter, if he's able to fight off of screens better, then maybe you look at it there. But Drew's too important to your team right now to base that off, you know, to say that what Josh Hart can, to really compare it off of whatever Josh Hart does. I think that there's other guys on this team that can kind of make that decision a little bit easier than Josh would be able to.
All right, so let's follow that up with biggest potential winners you think facing these 8 games. Like we said, Drew's extension eligible, Josh, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram's a free agent, Frank Jackson, Kenrich Williams. Who do you think is going to be the biggest winner, and who do you think the Pelicans would like to be the biggest winner?
That's a really good question. I think the Pelicans would like – did you mention Derek Favors?
No, I just assume, regardless of how Derek Favors plays, just because of their minimal flexibility this summer, he's going to come back, and it's going to be somewhere around a price range of like 10 to 15 million annually, maybe a year or two. But I think it's in both parties' interest to make that deal.
Okay, I think the Pelicans would like to see Brandon Ingram be the guy that's a big time winner. I think based off the type of dude that he is, the work ethic that he puts in, how much they talk about him, David Griffin has been very open. Even before we saw Brandon have some of his breakout games and really, really show what he can be offensively on the floor, David Griffin was talking about the fact that they wanted him around long term. And as the season progressed and we saw him have games in which he beat teams by himself, he should have had a buzzer beater win that, you know, had a fluke call at the end by a referee. Sorry, New Orleans, that keeps happening. But, you know, I think that, you know, he solidified
where Griffin was standing at on him, if it was 100% true. And it's just hard not to root for guys like Brandon, who doesn't talk much, who isn't on social media heavy, who you don't see him outside. He's not talking a whole bunch. He's really about basketball. He's a throwback in a lot of ways. He just wants to be the best basketball player he can be. And I think, if you're an executive, if you're David Griffin, if you're a head coach, if you're Gail Benson, those are the guys you want to pay, because not only do you think that they're going to help you win basketball games and be successful, but you're going to get your return on your investment, because they won't be a liability. So I think Brandon is the guy that they're rooting for. Who do I think will be the biggest winner? I think it's going to be Lonzo Ball. I think that we have to see if his jump shot is what it was, into that last 10 to 15 game stretch where he was shooting just off the charts and was really changing what people thought about in regards to what he was going to be long term. We started to slowly see people start to throw those Jason Kidd comparisons back into conversation based on the team he's playing with, his co-partner in sorts of Zion Williamson, but his overall dedication to improving with that staff, Fred Vincent, I think it's gonna be Lonzo in these type of situations. We don't know what type of shape people are gonna be in. We don't know how role players are going to be able to thrive in a situation that doesn't involve fans. It's that old adage that role players play best at home. We don't know what that's gonna do to players. I mean, it's gonna turn to AAU style of basketball. Well, I think in a situation that has so much uncertainty around it, from coronavirus scares to just the format in general, and then the quick turnaround afterwards into a whole new season, you need guys that they don't change. They're never too up, they're never too down. And that's Lonzo. If his game and his confidence is where it left off at, which I think it will be for him, he's going to win the most, because he's going to have an opportunity to be a part of a team that has a good chance. Well, I won't say a good chance, but they have a shot to get into this play-in tournament and then, defy some odds and beat Memphis and get into an eighth seed battle, or an 8-1 seed battle with the Los Angeles Lakers. People want Lonzo to do well. He has a lot of support out there, as we all have painfully seen. And, his group of Lonzo stands, as we call them. But more than anything, man, whether the team is up 20 or they're down 20, his face doesn't change. I call it, the Derrick Rose face. He is completely the same, not a whole bunch of emotion. But that works well in these type of high intensity environments that, are going to bring a lot of pressure. I don't think he's going to shy from the moment. And I think that will help him in this team. It will reflect well on him and help him in regards to his next future contract that I hope is in New Orleans.
His last 15 games, he did 14-8-7 on 43.9% from three on 6.5 shots per game. Jamal, let's talk about losers. A lot of guys have a lot at stake. We're not going to classify injuries, although that's got to be a real tangible concern given how aggressive the style will be as soon as everybody gets back. But who's got the most to lose over these final eight games?
Oh, man, that's actually a tougher question, right? Because because they have such a young team, it's hard to say that anybody's really going to be a loser. But if I had to pick one, one person, it would probably be someone like a Frank Jackson, because for whatever reason, this staff, I'm a Frank Jackson apologist, right? But, at times even I will admit that he gets minutes when I wouldn't expect him to get minutes. And I think that this is going to be Frank's last chance with the Pelicans. He'll probably latch on with somebody else. But, everything we've been talking about is how young this team is, and you know how many good players that they have on the team, and they're going to need roster spots, right? We look at guys like Didi, who's going to be coming over, the player they drafted last draft that's been playing overseas, and you know, it looks like he's going to be coming over in the off season, and I'm sure there's going to be other pickups that they try to make, whether it's trades or free agents or whatever. So there's just not a ton of space on this roster, but I have a feeling that Gentry and his infinite wisdom will give Frank one more chance to give him, you know, decent minutes. And for Frank, that's like 10 or 12 minutes a game, probably. But of our players, like I can't see, you know, if Lonzo has a bad rest of this stretch, you know, people are just going to say, oh, well, you know, they have a long layoff, blah, 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 whatever. So of the big guys on the roster, I don't think there's a ton of guys who have a whole lot to lose. Even Holiday, yeah, he's, you know, getting closer and closer to maybe getting an extension. But, you know, he's got such a long track record. I don't think, you know, a few games at the end of a weird season is going to affect him. But, you know, a guy like Frank Jackson, who will probably get some minutes and may not play so well in them, I think he's got a lot to lose, because if he doesn't play well, you've got Akil coming on your heels. You've got Didi coming in next year. And there's just not a lot of space for you anymore. And in the same vein, I think, you know, Kendrick Williams, who unfortunately, you know, the injury has really put him behind the eight ball. But you know, he's another guy that if he can't really provide them anything in the playoffs as far as maybe coming in reserve of Zion or even at the three, in certain stints, then you kind of start looking around with people like Zion Cheatham, you know, deeper on the roster, and you start thinking, okay, well, maybe we've had the Kendrick experience and the Frank Jackson experience, and maybe some of these other guys who we've got in the pipeline are going to come up and maybe take their spot. So I would say those are the two guys who have something to lose. Everybody else, I think they kind of are what they are, and the team has their, you know, already knows what those guys bring.
All right, Chris, do you foresee any losers if things go south?
I think it would be completely unfair, but I think Derek Favors could be a guy that loses in this equation.
Oh, he's definitely a loser, whether they want to lose.
yeah. I mean, and it comes from so many different areas. I don't think that Derek Favors is going to be, like, I don't think, you know, we joked about the whole untapped potential thing, but I don't know if that has as much to do with Favors as it does with the system and its rant, how it's run under Alvin Gentry. You know, I mean, how many times do we see Derek Favors in the post having his defender sealed and just not getting the post, you know, the post look, the opportunity? You know, we talked about how in past, I think you put out an article, Preston, talking about how, you know, how Derek's usage is the lowest that it's been in some time. His offensive attempts is the lowest that I think it's been in like 3 or 4 years. So he's taken quite the sacrifice coming to New Orleans. Now, I don't know how that would be used against him and what type of payday he was going to be up for next season. But I don't think it was going to be $17 million, which is what I, you know, he's getting paid right now. But, you know, as the season started to progress, we saw Nicola Melli start to play well. And we know that this team, they want to run some small ball lineups with Zion Williamson. Well, that puts Derek Favors off the floor. That pushes Derek Favors off the floor. And, you know, it puts in situations where the Pelicans, you know, they second guess themselves. You know, the Houston Rockets game in Houston, where Houston first started to implement that small ball five out system with PJ Tucker at the center. You know, I mean, that game comes to mind because the Pelicans were doing very well in it when Derek Favors was playing. And then towards the end of it, they went away from him. They sat him. I don't think he played more than 22, 23 minutes in that game. And they ultimately ended up losing because they fell in love with the three. Things got cold. They didn't have anything. They didn't have any type of rim protection that they missed with Derek Favors and some of the other small amount of intangibles that he throws in that doesn't show up on box scores. And they ended up losing that game. You know,
I wonder if things go south and they don't play and they don't play well. You see some elements or some games where the spacing is a little bit off because they're running more, you know, they're running that freestyle type of freelance offense versus anything, you know, more versus consistent structure to where Derek is getting, you know, is getting the ball, being able to make a few different plays as we saw before Zion came in, you know, out of the short roll and some of the passes he made that, you know, really helped him get things going right before Williamson returned. But I, you know, I wonder that if they struggle, will some of the pressure from the outside make David Griffin kind of pivot and say, okay, well, maybe we do need another center that can shoot the basketball to go with Nikola Melli. And I mean, and hell, what happens if Nikola Melli gets hot during this stretch? And, you know, and they say, okay, well, you know, we definitely need someone like Nikola. I know we've been talking about Miles Turner over the year, guys like Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, but, you know, I wonder or I worry, and I hope it isn't the case because I like Derek Favors. I'm not one of those guys that believe that, you know, that you can't win with him as your center because he is an incredibly smart basketball player. He's 30. He's another guy that doesn't talk much. I think he's very good for a team that wants to win, you know, a championship. He's, you know, he does the dirty work. I think he's good for you long term for that group of guys. But, you know, I wonder if he doesn't play well or if Alvin is a little bit unsure with his rotations or Melli gets hot, if they say, you know what, we need another shooter next to Zion. We need another guy that can give you things that Favors doesn't. So I think if there is someone that could lose financially and in regards to their place on this team going forward, you know, I wonder if it'd be Favors.
I just want to state for the record that Frank Jackson is only 6 months older than Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Derek Favors is only 6 months older than Nikola Melli. Just wild statistic that rookie Nikola Melli will be 30 years old next year, in January, really, so at the start of next season. Jamal, yeah. We're about at the hour mark, so go ahead, take us out of here, wrap up. You can follow him at JamDone06. Are there any foundations that you'd like anybody to investigate, or is there anything Pelicans-related you'd like to sign off on?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I haven't seen as a part of the conversation, maybe it's been out there and I haven't heard it. It was a Pelicans thing, but it's really, you know, we're about to go into a very strange end of the season playoff run. Like, we all know how NBA teams work. Normally when they first get started, there's like a feeling out process. Now these teams have been together, so you would think that wouldn't be as big of a deal, but also with COVID out there, there's going to be the potential for a very strange champion, right? And there's also going to be the potential for teams that you wouldn't normally think, you know, would be contenders to maybe make a deep run. Like, imagine if, say, the Pelicans sneak into the playoffs in the eighth spot, and they're playing the Lakers, and then we get breaking news that LeBron James is out with COVID, you know? Things like that can and probably will. I'm not saying specifically with LeBron, but it will happen to players, some players throughout this time period, right? And so, you know, if something like that were to happen, you could end up with a very strange champion or a very just strange playoff because especially in the West, you only really have two teams that are kind of juggernauts or at least juggernauts for the rest of the conference, in the Lakers and the Clippers. Everybody else, when you talk about the Nuggets or the Jazz, the Thunder, the Rockets, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, the Blazers, none of those teams that I just named really scare you. It's only those top two. So I think that's something we need to be thinking about. And I'm actually thinking about maybe writing something on, like, what would have to happen for the Pelicans to actually win the title in this very strange playoff that we're about to have. So that's one thing that I'm kind of thinking about.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I do have the odds for my bookie on the Pelicans. I think it was like plus 9,000 or something. I'll look that up while I transition over to Chris. Chris, is there anything you'd like to comment on? And what do you think the likelihood is that there'll be some kind of scandal where a team hides a player like LeBron James temperature from blowing like a 99.5 in order to get him into a critical game six?
This is professional sports. There is no way in hell there will not be some team that is trying to hide a player that is sick, that has symptoms, that is affected anywhere, has a family member with COVID, or no, that it's definitely going to happen. I don't think you can avoid it as this much. I mean, at this time, I don't think you know you're going to be able to avoid it with those with that many amount of people, those players in that bubble. I think it'd be very naive to think that you won't have someone that will end up getting it and won't know that they have it. Now, I guess in their favor, they're going to be testing nightly. So that will help. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I think somebody will come in contact with someone that they're not supposed to. I wouldn't be surprised if someone secretly tries to leave and come. Like, I don't, you know, there's so much uncertainty around all of this that still has to be talked about, that I'm not at a point to where I believe that this is going to go as smoothly as they want to. And that's before even talking about, you know, the fact that numbers are really starting to rise again at these places that have opened up. You know, maybe not everywhere, but in some places, these COVID numbers have been opened up recently. And some due to protests, but others due to them going into phase two, phase three. And I think that it's only a matter of time. And you can't tell me that if a star player, especially a team in a situation like the Lakers, who desperately push for this to happen, so LeBron would have an opportunity at his age to win a championship, whether people counted it with an asterisk or not. You can't tell me the Lakers are going to say, are going to report and put it out there that LeBron has COVID. If they can find a way to hide it, they will do it. This will be the first time the NBA has had a scandal. And I don't think that it's going to be just one team involving one player. I think it'll be multiple teams that will be involved. The NBA is going to do whatever they can to try to, make this go as smoothly as possible, because they're one of the first organizations to kind of give this thing a go. I think, you know, they'll be on live before baseball figures anything out, and they'll be on before football and everything. And I could definitely see that happening.
All right, you can follow Chris Connor at Impatient Bull. I'm going to ask one more just because I think it'll be fun. Jamile, it's game one of the play-in tournament. The Pelicans are the ninth seed against the Grizzlies. And you notice on the bench that there's a player missing. All of a sudden, Fox Sports NOLA starts reporting that this said player has been suspended for a week to 10 days because they broke quarantine. Who is this Pelicans player?
This is absolutely Jackson Hayes. 100% is and we will be treated once he's suspended, we will be treated to a nice video of him cursing out Adam Silver for suspending him, but 100% is Jackson Hayes.
All right. Thanks, guys. Remember, if you like what you're hearing, just retweet, share, rate us on iTunes. You can always grab somebody else's phone, grab your neighbor's phone. Make sure you wipe it down after. We don't want to spread any germs. Thank you to Mr. Chris Connor, Impatient Bull on Twitter, Jamile Dunn at JamDunn06. For now, stay safe, stay vigilant. Let's dance. Let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.